Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Mesechet Kitin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Hey. So let me just remind you what we are in the middle of. We had a psak yesterday by Shmuel, who said that both dinim are the same, and he didn't explain what he meant. And we were talking about before what the halacha is about a katan. At what point the katan is able to be zeicher la'atzmei, and at what point he might be able to be zeicher la'acherim. You remember that we spoke about the machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos yesterday, whether this is part of the takana, or whether this is a d'oraisa, because it's das acheres makna, that we discussed yesterday. Right now, we had a machlokas, this is where we're holding, we had a machlokas between Rav Chista and Rav Chinina. So Rav Chista, he said that what Shmuel meant, when he said that it's both the same, means that both cases being knowing the difference between an egos and an even, whether he's going to hold on to the egos, and that's enough to be kaina, and somebody who is old enough to understand that you need to return something that you borrowed. So Rav Chista said, both of them can only be kaina la'atzma. They cannot be kaina from others. That was Rav Chista. Whereas Rav Chinina, he says, no, it means Shmuel Paskin, that both of them are able to be kind of for others, and he brought what appeared to be a very clear proof, and that is that you're able to give a child a shita from the barrel of wine to be zoicha for the rest of the people in the community, and they will be able to be carrying from the chotzer into the mavli, right? So, isn't it clear, therefore, that they can be zeicher la'acherim? That was the raya that we had, that we're talking about a katan, was because we says over there, even a shivcha, and a shivcha by definition has to be a katana, because otherwise she was yotzer l'acheres. And so it's clear that a katan can be kaina l'acherim, can be zeicher l'acherim. And the answer to that was, that no, actually, Rav Chista Tainas, Shituf Mava'ot is different because it's entirely a Dirabona. And said Rav Chista yesterday, if you recall, well, that sure shut up these Vardan people, meaning Rav Chinina. So we got into a whole theoretical question over there about, well, what is the between the lines discussion? I mean, what did Rav Chista say? Well, Rav Chinina didn't have any response to that. I mean, obviously, there was a response that he thought he was going to have to fight off, and there was a way that he thought that he was going to fight it off, right? So yesterday, the Gemara said that Rav Chinina could have said that, well, what do you mean? Who cares if it's Drabonin or D'oraisa? Don't we have a general klal that kol ma d'tikun Rabonin ke'in D'oraisa tikun? In which case, if we see that you can use a shivcha kitana to be able to be zeicher for other people in the shituf mevaot, so then it must be that in general there's a concept of a katan being zeicher for others, right? That's what we thought that Rav Chinina was going to say. But what Rav Chista would have said, and the reason that Rav Chinina did not say it, because he knew Rav Chista would have said this, was that ki amrina, these were the last words we learned yesterday, ki amrina called the token rabbanan kein d'oraisa, only in something the isle ikr min ha-tera. But mil said the lesle ikr min ha-tera, lo. So in other words, it's true that we have a general rule that when the rabbanan utilize a mechanism that appears in the tera, they give it the same overall parameters. It applies in such and such cases where it would apply in the Torah. So if in the Torah it wouldn't have been possible to be zeichah for others as a ketana or as a katan, so it shouldn't be possible in the Rabbanan. But that is only in a case where the Rabbanan has some legs to stand on, meaning that it resembles the D'oraisa in some general way. But if it just is like out of nowhere, out of left field, so then, in issues like mevo'os, She's like, I mean, the whole concept doesn't exist in the Torah. There's no such idea of there being different types of Rishus HaYochi. It's belong to different people, and therefore you need an Erev. That whole idea comes out of nowhere. And therefore, in that case, we don't have the general rule of Komat HaTokon Rabbonin Ke'in D'Oraisa HaTokon. These are very fundamental questions that are with us throughout Shas and worthwhile thinking about and retaining. So today, even though this conversation never took place, as we're saying, this conversation was all a virtual conversation that would have been said between Rebbe Chinina and Rebbe Chisda. But once we raised all of these issues, we want to see whether that's really true. Because it appears from this following Mishnah that we have from Maisa Sheni that actually it would be possible to say that the Ke'en D'Oraisa and so on, this idea, that's not necessarily the case. Because take a look at the case over here. Ma'arimina Maisa Sheni, people don't like to be paid at their own Maisa Sheni because it costs them an extra 25%. That's the Chomesh, right? So is there a way to get around paying the extra money that you as an owner would have to pay if you want to be poda? So the Mishnah says, yes, there is a way to get around it. How? Well, you can say to your kids, libno bito agdolim, gdolim who are not semech on your shulchan, or la'avdo v'shivchato ha'ivrim, you take this money, here, this is your money, and I want you to be paid this Maaser Sheni of mine with it. Okay, obviously you're not going to say this to a regular person because then he would keep it. But over here, you're giving it to people that you know are going to do what you're asking them to do. And it says over here that they could take that money and they can go ahead and be poda it without paying the chomesh, right? So first of all, let's determine what age we're talking about over here. The case of the shivcha, we've already shown that if this shivcha would have already been pubescent, and therefore she would have a din of a gedela, she wouldn't be a shivcha, by definition. So, ida atashte sarot, my boy gabe, why is she in this guy's house? She doesn't belong to him anymore. Elalav, the lo atashte sarot. So, obviously talking about that she is still a ketana. And it says she can go ahead and be poda somebody else's meiser. So that means that by definition, if somebody is going to go ahead, he is going to be taking it out of the Rishus of Hegdash, and he's being kind of it, in this case, for somebody else. And that proves that as a katan, or the katana in this case, the shivcha, she is able to do it for someone else. Right? There's a number of different approaches, so it's the simplest approach. But in any event, it shows that indeed the halacha is that Rav Chisda is wrong, and that a katan actually can go ahead and be kind of for others. Says the Gemara to answer Rav Chisda, we're talking about b'maiser b'zman hazeh, which is derabbanan. And since it's only derabbanan, that's why a katan can be paid it. Now, obviously, this is a serious problem because, well, why don't we wait till we finish? We'll see. We'll see, because it doesn't really mean Bisman Hazeh, we're about, and then we'll see what the problem is. Says the Gemara, how can it be Bisman Hazeh? Bisman Hazeh, when it would be Drabonon, then by definition, there would not be any din of Yovel and so on, right? But the problem is that Ein Eved Ivri Noeg, Ela Bisman Shai Yovel Noeg. So how could somebody own Avdo v'shifchato ha'ivriim bizman hazeh? So he's got to be talking about when Yovel was still in effect. If Yovel was in effect, then the Meiser is the Oraisa. So there goes that answer. Okay. It doesn't mean bizman hazeh. It means it is the din of bizman hazeh. What's it referring to? It's talking about, you're right, during the time when the Yovel was noheg. But it's talking about a pumpkin that was growing inside a flower pot, so it wasn't really mechuber lekarka, and it doesn't have a hole in it. So the Rabbanan were gozer that even a flower pot that is not considered to be connected to the ground is chayev in meiser min rabbanan. So therefore, since it's only rabbanan, this guy has given a ketana the money to be paid it for him, and in a drabonin it works. Now, the obvious question, Rabbi Osai, even though I can't see your faces, and it's so hard to talk to you, but yeah, thank you, those of you who are kind enough to share your visage with me, making it a little bit easier to speak the Vetera together. So the obvious question over here is, Rabbi Osai, that we said a minute ago, that even though it's a derabbanan, you're going to still come back with the taina that kol ma de token rabbanan kein de araisa token. And what happened to that? It doesn't help to say it's derabbanan. The case we had before was also a derabbanan, remember? That was the case of shituf mevo'ot. And we said, yeah, but even if it's derabbanan, that would have been the Vardanah's response. Kol ma de tikun rabbanan kein de araisa tikun. And so the comeback to that was only if it has no basis in the Torah. I mean, surely you're not going to tell me that Meiser has no basis in the Torah. So now what good did this answer do you? There's a lot of discussion among the Achronim about what in the world the Gemara seems to be doing here, ignoring what we had just said literally a few lines ago. So the simplest solution that is proposed is that since we're talking about a double whammy derabbanan, we're talking about pumpkins, first of all, that are not chayev in Meiser min d'oraisa, and these pumpkins grow in a flower pot that doesn't have a hole in the bottom, which in general it's not even considered to be in the ground. So when you're combining two issues like that, one derabbanan on top of another derabbanan, that's the equivalent of saying something that has no mokar in the Torah at all, because you can't ever imagine a situation where it's not growing on the ground. Well, but it's like Meiser, but it's also nothing that is chayev in Meiser. And to say that that would be kein d'oraisa tikun, there's no similarity here on any level to the d'oraisa. Okay, possibility. Anyway, Rabbi Isaac, getting back to what we were talking about. So what we've been discussing over here is the various phases that we have in the maturation process, which allows a person at a certain age to sell lemonade at a lemonade stand, to be kena for somebody else, perhaps. That was the machlokes. And we're talking about what is necessary for a child to be aware of in order to be mekabel a get, the issue about whether that's considered to be shiluch, and if she was going to keep coming back to the house, that's not called to be mishalcha mibeita. So let's go through the various phases. So Omar Rava, basically, we could take a look at three different phases when it comes to a katan, and that was, we started off knowing the difference between a nut and a rock, right? So that person, that's level number one. Such a person is able to be zochet for himself, is not yet mature enough to be zochet for others. The same thing would be true in a child, that once a female child, once she reaches that age, she is also considered to be mitkadeshet when it comes to the din of miyun. So remember, miyun is a child that has no father, and therefore, there's no one who midiraisa can be makabel kedushin for her. There's two possibilities. She might have a mother who's taking care of her. She might have an older sibling that's taking care of her. And then that sibling is able to create a kedushin derabbanan. So you remember, we made that takana to prevent making a child an object of predation. So we therefore give a derabbanan marriage. If she's married, so her so-called husband will make sure that nobody is taking advantage of her. And remember that in the time of the Gemara, having sex with a child is not called taking advantage. It's having this free sex in which everybody who comes along takes advantage. That's called taking advantage. But on the contrary, if we appoint someone to be called her husband, that is wonderful. That's a benefit for her. So therefore, she has to, however, at least be old enough to know what marriage is. in the sense that she considers herself to be in a particular state. So that would be the age which we call mikudeshet for miyun, and this is big enough. She knows the difference between a husband who's a nut or a husband who's just dense like a rock, you know. Okay, so there she's considered to be at the age of mikudeshet lemiyun. Less than that, then she's not even considered to be married midrabbanan, because she just doesn't know the difference between, yes, being married, not being married, so it's not going to help her to have someone who watches her. She goes wandering around. And in the case where she doesn't have a mother and she doesn't have a sibling, in that case, the Rabbanu were metaken that she can actually be mekabelet kedushin for herself as a child for kedushei derabbanan. All right. Now, the next case are the case that we had earlier about the pa'utot, where we said 6 to 8, remember in the Gemara? So those are the children that are able to buy and sell metaltalin. So pa'utot mikran mekach mimkran mimkar b'metaltalin. And there is a also similar age for a female. Now for everything else it's the same, but when we say for a female, we're talking about in inyanim that have to do with Isser. So over there, kinegdan biktana, she can take a get even where she had been married by kedushei aviha. So she is old enough to accept the get because she understands what a get is. And the halacha is that since a woman is mekabelet at gita, bal korcha, so we don't need her das. And once she's old enough to know what that get means, so that would be the equivalent in age to the pu'utot. So she could be mitgareshet, even though her father, who subsequently died, was mekabel the kedushin for her. Once he reaches the stage of onat nedarim, now remember that onat nedarim is 1 year prior to gadlut, and during that stage we have the concept of yafli, ishki yafli. It's called Mufla Samuch Le'ish, as we had back in the Dorim. So within that year, prior to Gadlut, she actually, her neder would be Nivdeket, and we take a look. If she knows to whom she's being noderet, so then her nedarim are chal, either male or female. But in terms of Kenegdan Biktana, which seems to be saying that a female that is only of the age of Nidrehem, that is to say, Onat Nidarim, Kinegdan Biktana Choletzet. Now, this is a little bit of a problem, because what do we mean by Choletzet? We know that you need to be a Gedola, because Huksha Isha Le'ish. And in the Parsha of Chalitza, it refers to the Ish being Eila to Bezdin. So how in the world could she be choletzet? This doesn't make much sense. So Rashi takes it at face value that a year before she's actually a nara, she is able to do chalitza. And this is a bit of a problem, as Tosas points out. This is Rava who is saying this. And Rava is Gufa, the Madi Omar, who holds that even if she presents signs of puberty in the year before, it doesn't change anything, benogea chalitza, and therefore, how over here would he say that she's considered to be a gedola for chalitza? So Tosfos tainas that Rava here is just trying to fill out the male and female sides of his chart. So even though he doesn't believe that this is the halacha, he mentions the halacha here as being that she could be choletzet, because that's how Rabbi Yossi holds the halacha is. So he's saying, aliba de Rabbi Yossi, in other words, there are shitas that say that she would actually be able to be choletzet. That's one approach. Tosfos has another approach, which he changes the girsa here and proves that it isn't really Rava, it's Rabba, and because of that, it's not a contradiction, and she's considered to be a gedela if she has simanim tochazman, meaning in the period of a year prior to the age of 12. Okay. Anyway, that sums up very neatly the different times, both for Zecharim and for Nekeves. And now we are ready for a very important moment. We're going to have to see how Richie is able to function without duress and not under threat, because unfortunately Doc was unable to be here today with his big 5-inch long hypodermic. So let's see what you can do there, Rich. Excellent. I'm assuming that you drew your energy from being in my house for some reason and not on your own porch. Oh, no, you're indoors. I see. Okay. So the Mishnah says that when we get into a situation of making shlichut, we've been talking about the various issues of shlichut, what the dinim are of the shlichut. Now we want to get into the wording of when you make someone a shliach, what particularly makes a shliach l'kabbalah, what makes a shliach l'holacha. We started discussing that. And what about if there are other issues that are brought up in the shlichut? Will the shlichut function only according to the strict interpretation of the way that you phrased it? Or is that just considered to be additional hopeful things that you're hoping that the shliach will take care of? So let's imagine, first of all, a case where a ketana, this was the mission we discussed earlier, a ketana who does not have the ability to create a shliach. So she says, hitkabel igiti. So over there, obviously, even if the husband sends the get with this person, as we said earlier, adam yodea she'en shlichut leketana, and when he gives the get to that shliach, he means to make that shliach a shliach of holacha. And therefore, the shliach is not a shliach for Kabbalah, because nobody authorized that except the Ketana. But when the get gets to her hands at that point, like any other case of holacha, it becomes a get. But that gives the husband a chance to still change his mind before the shliach gets there. Why is that? Because ein katano se shliach. Therefore, the Kabbalah aspect of the shlichus was irrelevant. Now, suppose the father of a child said, tzei v'hitkabel biti gita. Oh, now, as we saw earlier, the Torah was mezake, the father with that right, and he could even create a shliach l'kabbalah. And therefore, in that case, if the husband actually gave the shliach the get, even though it was for a ketana, having been authorized by her father, lo yachzor, he cannot change his mind. Now, let's talk about ancillary comments that are part of a shlichut. Suppose somebody says, give a get to my wife in New York. Okay, so what about if he gives the get in New Jersey? We don't want to talk about things that are bad mazel in places that are real places. So I'm talking about New York, New Jersey. So if he changed the rules, would that be a good get or not? So he gave it in a different place. Then it's possible, because we understand that his meaning in saying, I want it to be there, is that he's saying something like, oh, God, in New York, everybody's going to be gossiping about this. It's all I need for people to be talking about me in New York. In New Jersey, we know where that is. Give it in New York. You know. So if you went ahead and you give it in New Jersey, so then he didn't want you to give the get. You weren't a kosher shliach. The get is possible. But suppose you say, give this get to my wife. She is in New York. And it turns out that he finds her in New Jersey. Then it's kosher. Because when he was saying she is, he's only mare makomula. He's only trying to let the person know for his convenience where he's likely to find his wife. But, I mean, he doesn't care where he actually delivers the get. In the case where a woman says, be makabo my get in New York, and he was makabal it in New Jersey, it's possible. But in this case, Rabbi Elazar is machshir. Interesting. Why would there be a difference between the man and the woman? The Gemara is going to ask in a moment. Haveli igiti mimakom ploni. How about if she says, bring me my get from such a place, from New York, and he brings it from New Jersey? That is certainly kosher. And basically, it's not up to her, really, because it's the Baal that has to be Sholeach the get. But we'll see the logic in the issues here in a moment. Asks the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar, why does Rabbi Elazar make a difference between the Reisha where the husband said something and the Seifa where the woman said something? So if you don't pay any attention to what the Baal said, so then the get is pasul. If you don't pay attention to the place that the woman said, the get is not pasul. Why is that? Well, that's because the husband is midaite megarish. He is giving that get from his da'as, and he considers himself to be the whole boss of these proceedings. So he gives orders about where to give the get, you know? And if that's the case, if the shliach isn't going to follow the orders of the Baal, then he's not the shliach of the Baal any longer. Masha Inkein, when it comes to the woman, she doesn't view herself as the boss. She is dependent on where the Baal is going to be giving the get. So since she is Baal Korcha Mitgareshet, so then Mar'a Makom Hilo, she obviously, even though she says, take my get from such and such a place, or she says, be my shliach only at such and such a place, she does not view herself as being capable of defining precisely where it's because maybe the Baal won't give it to her in this other place. So explains Rashi. Now, there's a deeper issue that's involved over here, and that is the psychology of ownership. In other words, once something is in your hands, you always think you're the boss. And when something is clearly not in your hands, you don't think you're the boss. So the moment something is in your hands, when you say something, you're giving orders. Take this get in such and such a place, because that's the only place I'm going to give it, and I'm the boss. Masha Inkein, says Reb Elazar, the psychology would be that a woman who does not view herself as the one who's in charge, when you're not in charge, you don't give orders. So this is exactly what happens. The moment you're a teenager, now you're giving orders. This is my life and I do with it what I want, you know, because now you're the boss. So the moment anybody's stupid enough to empower you, empowerment is a disaster because now you really think you're the boss. You know, who cares what God says? It's exactly the same issue as over here. And once a person learns that he's not really empowered, so then he stops issuing orders. So over here, the woman, this is a very profound insight, Rabbi Elazar, into the way people actually think, right? You know, you let a person believe that it's his, so now he's giving you the orders. Okay, so that's the difference. And now we are given a special treat of a double dose of Richie. A double dose of Richie.
A double dose at a later date. So
now, what happens in the interim period between the time that the shliach was let loose to be mekabel a get and between the time that a telegram arrives that the get was actually accepted? So, I mean, if this woman is married to a kohen and she is eating truma because of her husband, then the chora, the moment that a shliach lekabola is let loose on the scene, you never know when he might have picked up that get from the husband, might have bumped into the husband. How about if we combine the issues of the previous Mishnah with this question? When he was made a shliach kabola in this particular place. So, okay, then that is going to be a function of the machlokas, Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim, right? And that's exactly what this Mishnah seems to provide. In this case, a woman married to a kohen says, bring me my get. So if you say, bring me my get, that means that you'll pick up the get from my husband. Again, this was the machlokas, the Rambam and other Rishonim, whether she can literally create the shlichut or whether she is basically saying, ask my husband to make you a shliach to bring me the get. Okay, fine. That we've discussed many times. That's not really important to the question. Does she have to worry about eating truma? No, because since we're talking about a shliach loholacha, there's no problem of her eating truma until the get actually arrives. And in this case, she knows the get hasn't arrived, and therefore I don't have to worry about eating truma. Fine. But the question is, what about boost? Reve. So there, you have to pick it up. That's what happens over here also. If she said pick it up in the sense of being macabre, then the moment that Shliach gets out of the house, she has no way of knowing whether maybe he bumped into the husband. She's a sur lechol truma miyad. Now here we get into the questions of the previous Mishnah. Suppose she said, pick up my get for me as a Shliach Kabbalah in such and such a location. So then, all right, we don't need to worry, do we, until the get actually arrives at that location. Because if there's the Shliach would have taken it before, it wouldn't have been a good get if she wasn't in that location, at least according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Elazar, who holds that a woman doesn't give orders about the get, and she's just trying to say where the get would be. So according to Rabbi Elazar, he's Oser Miyat, because how do you know that the Shliach didn't bump in to the husband at some other place? Okay, but the Tanakhama is saying that when the get does get to that place, that it is a kosher get. I'm a little bit confused. You said she can't eat truma once the get is in that location. But wait a minute. What do you mean in that location? She said only accept the get in a particular location. Who cares when the get arrives at that location? Didn't the Tanakhama say that the get isn't kosher unless it was actually received at that location? So what happened here in the Mishnah? Ha'amrit git reisha lo havi gita. Ah, right. The Mishnah is clearly talking about a subtly different case. It was like this. The wife had said to him, go and be mekabel a get for me, let's say, in the town of Mata Mechasya. But you should know, sometimes my husband goes on business trips to Bavel. This means the town of Bavel, obviously. Mata Mechasya is in Bavel. But in the town of Bavel. So there we're understanding that what she means is, you know what? If you meet him in Bavel, please pick up the get there, you know? So I just want to make sure that you get the get. That's the point. But I don't want this get to be a kosher get until it arrives in Mata Mechasya. That's what it's saying. So when it arrives in Mata Mechasya, it's a good get. Now, obviously, there's a big problem over here. How the heck did the get become a get in Mata Mechasya if it wasn't given to the Shliach to be a get when he gave it to him? Because this would be equivalent to the case of a woman picking her get up off of the floor. Fine, so the guy brought it to Mata Mechasya, but where was the Nesina of the get? She said you can't give it to him in Bavel. So then how did it become a get? So, I mean, Tosha says, apparently it's starting about that he says, I mean, you could say that he becomes a Shliach Kabbalah later, but we said it has to be Chozer Shlichus Eitzel HaBaal. So Tosha comes up with a complex case that he was made a Shliach Holocha until coming to the Mata Mechasya. And then he was told, you make a Shliach Laholacha, and then you act out the Shlichut LeKabbalah. And therefore, it's not considered to be Lo Chazra Shlichus Etzla. Okay, but understand, this is not as simple as it looks, because there would need to be an actual act of Kabbalah, obviously, for her. And then Rabbi Elazar says, no, she could have picked up the get at any moment. Therefore, she has to stop eating truma. Well, obviously, you're not adding anything. Rabbi Elazar said in the first part of the previous Mishnah, the first part of this Mishnah, that when a woman gives you a location, she's only telling you where it is. And that's called Mara Mokom Hila, right? So you don't teach me anything by saying that. And of course, according to Rabbi Elazar, it would be immediately Asur Truma. Well, obviously. No. Here, too, there's a subtle difference. What it's saying is that she told the Shliach, listen, don't waste your time. Go east, young man, or old man, maybe to the east. Go east, old man, because that's where you'll find my husband. That's where he is. Instead, this guy goes west. Okay, so you might think that since she had known that the husband was in Hong Kong and this guy is going to San Francisco, so there's no chance that they're going to meet, right? And therefore, you would rely even on Rebbe Elazar, on the logistics of the situation, that she can continue eating truma until it's reasonable that they bumped into each other. Therefore, kamash malon, sumadatema. Well, if he went west, he's not going to meet the husband. Kamash malon, you never know. Maybe you'll meet in the departure room at the airport. So she doesn't know when he's leaving. No, seriously, this is exactly what it means. That maybe they're both in sitting in the same departure room. He's going to be taking a flight east. You'll be taking a flight west. You had no idea you were going to bump into each other, but that may be where you meet. So So maybe when you're in the departure lounge, you'll bump into the guy, and they're given the get, and therefore we have to be machmir even in this case. Now, what's interesting is that this question of do you mean precisely what you say, or are you just giving a general indication to your shliach about how to do things in the easiest way? We have the same kind of machlokas when it comes to making an Erev. So let's say you tell your shliach, go and make me an Erev and use dates for the Erev. The guy goes out and he uses figs, grogrot. Or you tell him grogrot and he uses dates. So one brisa says that's fine. It's a kosher Erev. And one brisa says, it's not a kosher Erev, any Ruvei Erev. And Rabbi immediately suggested, well, yes, that's because one is going according to the Rabban and one is going according to Rebbe Elazar. So Rebbe Elazar says, we don't really care about irrelevant points, and therefore it doesn't define the shlichut, whereas the Rabbanan say, a shlichut is precisely as defined. You can't make an assumption. Yeah, I understand he said that, but that was only for purposes of letting me know what's convenient. No, he meant what he said. Okay, according to Rabbi Elazar, we don't say that just because it was phrased that way, that he meant what he said as a hakpada, unless we have grounds to make that assumption. But the difference between figs and dates in an Erev, which you're not going to be actually eating anyway, I mean, like, what difference would that make? So therefore, according to Rebbe Elazar, would be perfectly kosher. So ha-rabbanan d'amrei kepeda. The rabbanan say that the way that it was phrased by the woman, it's not a question whether she's giving orders. It's a question of what the shlichus was defined as by her words. You can't jump to any kind of conclusions to create shlichut. So according to the rabbanan, it's kepeda. According to Rebbe Elazar, we don't assume it's kepeda unless we have basis for such an assumption. And therefore, he's just saying, you know, it'd be very easy to use these dates. You can use the dates. I mean, the guy wants to make it with figs. You can make it with figs. Rabbi Yosef says, I mean, you don't have to come on to the machlokas in our Mishnah being nogea, the question of the Erevin. It could be that over there, the two brises are both going according to Rabbanan. And there were two different cases. In one case, he spoke about his own dates. So if you used his dates, or you used his figs, he didn't really care. He's just saying it's convenient to make it out of, you know, what's available in the pantry. So if it's bishalo, it doesn't matter. But in the second, in the bright that it says the Erev is not an Erev, there it's talking about that he didn't have handy any kind of fruits for the Erev. Somebody gave him rishus and said, you can use my dates. So obviously, if over there he only had rishus on the dates, and he said, take the guy's date, then you can't make the Erev with the person's fruit, because this person wouldn't, the person who made you the shliach would not have wanted you to steal the fruit for his Erev. And there it was kepeda. Omale Abaye. That doesn't make any sense, because there's other contradictions that are just the same, and over there has nothing to do with whose it is, and has everything to do with the question of Rebbe Elazar and the Rabbanan about whether it's kepeda or not. Here, take a look at this case. We have the same problem of somebody who says to shliach, go and put my Erev in a closet. So the Erev, actually, the shliach goes and he puts the Erev in a shovach. It's not a closet, but all right. I mean, it's basically cubby holes for the birds, you know. Same thing. So, or vice versa. So put it in the shovach, and the guy puts it in a closet. Here I have a little bit migda. So over there, too, we have two different brises. One brisa says it is an eruv, and one brisa says it's not an eruv. Now, over there, I mean, what do you mean? It's his. It's not his. I mean, you're not stealing, putting it in the guy's. The guy said you can use my closet. Well, yeah, you can't use his shovach. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You can't use your answer about shalov v'shel chavero. So obviously, you're going to end up needing to say that it's dependent in our sugya about whether words about shlichus are meant literally and they're kepeda, or whether they're just general guidelines. And that's the machlokas Rebbe Elazar and the Rabbanim, like we suggested before. So don't start giving these logistical explanations. No, says Rav Yossi, not necessarily. That's because you jumped to conclusions and you thought that Migdal and Shovach are a reference to where things were. No. It's talking about the peres of the Migdal or the peres of the Shovach. And over there, if you use the wrong fruit, so it's the same thing. If it belonged to somebody else, so then it would be aser. The peres of the Shovach are using the birds and having some chicken, so to speak, pigeon, for your Erev and so on. Okay, so over there, yes, it's Akpada, says Rabbi Yosef. We could use the same answer that we said before. And this brings us to a super duper triathlon, Richie, today, in which we get yet another moment of Richie. Another moment of Richie. That is Richie, as in Sir Richard. Oh my gosh. This is unbelievable. Unacceptable. He fell asleep on the job. Skipper. Titanic. Yeah.
Maybe he's just not finished.
Okay. All right. Zog the Halakha Mishnah. To be left in a lurch at the triathlon. Whoa. So. Oh, yes, 3 years later.
Dereliction of duty, what can I tell you?
I can see that iceberg right there, coming in right there, and it's, watch out, Rich! Okay. Omer, so how about the actual language that defines a shlichus for giving a get? Now, when you say give a get, the Torah never uses that word, give a get. Get. What is a get, for heaven's sakes? It's not such a concept, right? But it's become the normal way to refer to a divorce paper. Okay, so obviously if a guy says to a shliach, give a get to my wife, we know what he means, and the Lashon B'nei Adam, of course, is going to be definitive. But how about if the guy uses one of the other Lashonas, perhaps little bit over-sophisticated Lashonas in giving a get, you know? I mean, because the get has all kinds of language, like Igeret, it says in it, you know, so this should be a Shavikin. I mean, well, like, what if the guy's trying to show off, he's using these other languages? Is that considered to be a Shlichut? So, Ha'omer Kitvu get to Tunu Leishti? Yes. If he says Gershuha, okay, I mean, obviously, Gerushin is also, I mean, it's true, it's not used as the language, but, I mean, people call a shiluach a gerushin, even though the Torah doesn't use the word ever, legarshami beita, but that became just as language common as get is. How about if he says, kitfu igeret to tnula? Whoa, I mean, this is hoity-toity, let me tell you. But it does say in the get, Dein da havi lechiminoi, sefer teruchin, the igeret shivukim. All right, so this guy is like, he's a fancy guy. He's not going to talk like cheapos talk. Get, gerishin, who ever heard of those words? Igeret, yes. Okay, so write her out an igeret and give it to her. Okay, all of those are perfectly good ways of making a shliach. Hare elo yikatfu v'yitnu. But suppose he says, pitrua. Oh, that means fire her. What does that mean? Parnasua, you know, give her her needs. You know, what are her needs? I mean, her needs might be buy her some new clothes. What if you say, asula kenimus, give her what the situation calls for by etiquette. Asula karaui, give her what's appropriate. Now, that's ridiculous. Lo amaklum. I mean, he could be talking about anything. He could be talking about what's appropriate for her dresses, what's appropriate for her disgusting ways. I don't know. So whatever it is, it certainly is not a clear enough indication that you're meant to be a shliach, and therefore you were not empowered by these words. So in other words, even if maybe this guy thinks he's making a shliach, and the shliach understands his intent in making a shliach, what we're finding here is that the words are definitive when they come to the description of the actual chalos that the shliach has to achieve. Over there, you can't just assume that he's a shliach. And we'll see that there are cases where we will even make that assumption. And these are coming up in the next Mishnah. Okay, so let's examine some of the Lashonis that we haven't spoken about. How about if he says, shilchua, send her away? Now, we know that it does say in the Pasuk, it says, v'shilcha mi beito. Richie is trying to avenge himself by keeping the mic on so that we should hear him the whole time, thinking that that makes up for not being there when he needs to be there. Okay. Very good. So what if you say shilchua? What about if you say shivkua? Now, shivkua is the language that is written in the get itself because it talks about in the get an igeret of shivukin. Shivukin means being patur from the marriage. So, I mean, that is like one step away, but it's like really close. How about the lotion of tirchua? Tirchua is an Aramaic translation, teruchin, of gerushin. So terchua would be an Aramaic way of saying gershua. But it's not normally the way that people refer to divorce. They don't call divorce teruchin. So is that clear enough an indication of the creation of shlichut? In all of these cases, yes. Hare elo yichtavu v'yitnu. But suppose you use the lashon of pitrua, parnasua, asula kenimus, asula karaui. So all of those cases, that, as we said in the Mishnah, lo omar klum. Whereas Tanya Rabbi Natan omer, no. It depends actually what you said. Did you say patrua or did you say pitrua? So it's actually a little bit of a confusion over here about what the correct girsa is. Rashi understands that the difference over here is a difference between speaking Aramaic and speaking Hebrew. And therefore, he understands that the lashon, the difference between these lashonas is that if you say the lashon of patruha, then that is the same as saying shalchuha, because it is the same as get piturin. Because in that case, you use the dagesh. So you're saying pateruha. That is a lashon of get rid of her, meaning from this marriage. If you would say pitrua without a dagesh in the tet, then it would mean cancel her debts or something like that. But it certainly does not mean go and get rid of her. So then she's not the object. She's the adjective in a sense. Her debts. Let her debts be canceled. That's the difference according to Rashi, whether you used a dagesh in the tet or you didn't, and therefore would be the difference of how you would have pronounced it. It would have been different. And because of that, Rabbi Nosson says that's the difference. If you're using it as a lashon tzava of paterua, it's one thing. If you say pitrua, then it could mean get rid of her debts. Omar Rava, that's because Rabbi Nosson is a bavloi. He is used to speaking Aramaic in Bavel, and he will make a distinction between speaking in Aramaic or speaking in Hebrew. So according to him, there's a big difference between the pitrua and paterua. Masha'in came, our Tana, who always speaks Hebrew, and he comes from Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't make that distinction because he never uses the Aramaic version. And so because of that, he said that that Lashon is lo amar klum, because it could always mean cancel her debts. Iboilu, hotzi'ua mahu, azvua mahu, hatirua mahu, hanichua mahu, ho'ilula, help her out mahu, asula kadat, do what the religious requirement is. Okay, I mean, what about those? How about, I mean, we know the answer to one of them, right? Because pshot miyachoda, one of them we mentioned in the Braita before. Tatanya, asula kedat, asula kenimus, asula karaui, all of those things are meaningless and lo amar klum. Those, that means halacha lemaisa, we have three categories. We have definite shlichut. We have lo amar klum, meaning zero, no chance of it being a shlichut. And then we have the other cases that remained up in the air that we never paskened. And in the event that somebody made a shliach with those lishonos, then it would be a suffix, and the get would be, need to be reissued, of course, with a proper shlichus. Okay, Rabosai. Sorry for your missing out on today's fantastic triathlon, but Bezrat Hashem, we'll have more opportunities in the future. Have a wonderful, glorious day, and may we have a Chodesh Menachemov filled with Besuras Teves, and the Chodesh HaChamishi turning into Sosem V'Simcha B'Meira.